Hello and welcome to the Go Home Show podcast. I'm Michael Henson, and as ever, I'm joined by Chris Anderson, and this is our review of SmackDown from the 23rd of October. It's the Go Home Show for Hell in a Cell, which takes place this Sunday, so let's jump straight into it. And we start with a special edition of the KO Show with the one, the only, Mr. Daniel Bryan. And they're like, Daniel Bryan was talking about he wants a title defended on SmackDown every week. He mentioned the Intercontinental title. But then Kevin Owens like, oh, well, the reason I brought you out here was that I want to talk about a championship, but it's not the Intercontinental title. It's the tag team title. Like, imagine them two together as a tag team. It'd be incredible. But Daniel Bryan made a very good point that whenever Kevin Owens has a tag team partner, he's not been the nicest, shall we say. He seems to have turned on every single person. Most famously, Sami Zayn, and then the Festival of Friendship. Anyway, on the back of that, out come Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode, the Street Profits, and Cesaro and Nakamura. There's a lot of words exchanged, and then Daniel Bryan suggested to test out the idea of the tag team right now. So fisticuffs, then we come back from a commercial break and we're into an eight-man tag, which is Dolph Ziggler, Robert Roode, and Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro against Street Profits and Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owens, which of course we need a team name for. So any suggestions, hit us up on Twitter at Go Home Show Pod. Now the heels are in control of the match at the start until Daniel Bryan hit a hot tag. There's plenty of offense until he goes for the backflip off the top and his knee goes out. The heels then beat down Daniel Bryan and work his leg that he's injured. Eventually we get a hot tag to Angelo Dawkins, who runs wild, brother. Everyone hits their big move. And then it ends with Montez Ford hitting his famous frog splash, the one that he nearly hits the roof of the Amway Center on Cesaro to pick up the win. Chris, a very exciting start to SmackDown.
Yeah, it was. And I was a bit nervous as we went through the start of the match because I thought it was going to be the very paint-by-numbers eight-man that WWE does in their like, TV shows. But actually, having Daniel Bryan hit a comeback and then give out his knee and then use another beatdown there to kind of create a new story within the match was really, really nice. The finish was what the eight-man finishes always are on TV shows, which is where, like I said, you get everyone hitting big moves all over the place. But as an opening match, it was really nice. And it's good to see the tag division get a little bit of love because it's been a difficult couple of months for the tag division in WWE. But that took us into what we've all been waiting for months. They've teased it. They've dangled it in front of us. It is Law and Otis. Now, this was split into three parts throughout the show. I'm just going to run through the whole thing here because otherwise we're going back and forth the whole time. This seemed very Fashion Files-y in the way it was set up. We did have some exciting cameos. We had The Judge, which was JBL. We had Ron Simmons as Bailiff. And before you ask, yes, he did deliver a damn at the very end of the show. The court clerk was Teddy Long, holla holla. It starts off with Miz firing his lawyer and then represents himself. He claims that Otis created an unsafe workspace, that he physically and mentally assaulted him, and that his failure to use the briefcase should mean it's stripped away from him. Otis makes a very good rebuttal in saying that he deserves the case because he won the Money in the Bank ladder match. I mean, you can't really argue with that, but let's move on from there. We get witness statements from John Morrison, from Rey Mysterio, and most hilariously from Asuka, who does her whole statement in shouted Japanese. We get a funny moment where JBL turns to Teddy Long and says, did you get all that? And Teddy Long says, yep, every word. And we cut back to Asuka, who then screams, player, player, which I really enjoyed. It's probably the funniest moment of the whole thing. When we get to the end, JBL is about to side with Otis when Miz plays his ace up his sleeve and gives JBL a briefcase full of cash, which obviously changes his mind. He then sides with the Miz, saying that Otis must defend the briefcase at Hell in a Cell. And we now have a fifth match in a 3.5 hour long pay-per-view. It is Otis versus The Miz for the Money in the Bank briefcase. It'll be interesting to see how that match goes because we have a lot of like blood feudy type of matches already built in there. So I can assume this will be the comic relief. But then if we're doing the comic relief, it's difficult to have the heels go over. So we assume that Otis will defend the briefcase. But let's see what we get. It's good to have another match on. Crush, what were your thoughts about Law and Otis?
I mean, as I mentioned before we start recording this, I'm a big fan of the managed to get JBL, Ron Simmons and Teddy Long in a segment. And the added match now to Hell in a Cell sort of makes sense. To say it might be the comic relief. But if Miz goes on to win, then it sort of defeats the objective splitting up heavy machinery. You'd think that Otis retains it and then cashes it in, or whatever will happen. I'm just hoping to see an interference. We've had El Gran Gordo. I want to see El Gran Gordo and it's Tucker dressed as a luchador to cost Miz the match. And then we have a tag team the next week on Raw of El Gran Gordo and El Gran Gordo. There we go. That is my wild prediction of the night. We then move in to Bianca Belair versus Zelina Vega. Bianca Belair's SmackDown debut, of course. And obviously, Zelina Vega has had two title matches with Asuka in recent months. Two very good matches, but on this time, she was on the losing side. Belair had a video promo before the match, sort of like an advert promoting her, obviously ahead of her debut. And in the match, Zelina Vega can't match Belair for her power. Obviously, she's the strongest, but she's also the smartest and the quickest of WWE. She tried to work the arm, but Belair kept powering through. She lands a couple of strikes, Vega, but then gets put down by Belair nice and easy. She clean presses her into the turnbuckle and then hits the KOD for the win. A good showing from Bianca Belair, but a surprise they did Zelina Vega dirty after her two very good matches with Asuka in September, I think it was. It seems a long time ago now because 2020 is dragging. But hey-ho, that is beside the point. We then get into a Shorty G versus Lars Sullivan match, and I can guarantee Chris was a huge fan of this ending.
Yeah, so for me, Shorty G is probably the most underrated and undervalued superstar within the WWE. He's in the ring to start off the segment with Kayla. She does a very quick interview saying why he would even want to challenge Lars Sullivan. He says he's tired of being ignored, tired of not being drafted by SmackDown, not being drafted by Raw, and it's up to him to change his destiny. And that starts with facing Lars Sullivan. This match was more or less exactly what you expect it to be. It was a squash, 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 squash. The only offense that Shorty G really hit was a Rolling Thunder. He went for a second one and he missed it. That just annoyed Lars Sullivan, who hit a short arm clothesline and then a freak accident for the win. I think this match was probably 2 minutes at most. After the match, Kayla sticks a microphone into the face of a battered Shorty G to ask him how he feels, and he says that he quits. Now, that had me nervous that we lost Shorty G forever. However, we come back from the commercial break and we see Adam Pearce asking Shorty G if he really quits. And Shorty G says that he quits being Shorty G and that he is now Gable, Chad Gable. Now, from what he was saying and his delivery, this seemed like a bit of a heel turn. But for me personally, and I think a lot of the internet wrestling community, Shorty G being kicked to the curb and Chad Gable coming back is the biggest face turn that this guy could ever do. So I'm very interested to see where they go with it. My guess is we'll see him be a heel for a little bit, but then quickly kind of turn him face because he is a popular superstar. It's one of those heel turns that works now because there aren't crowds in, but they'll have to kind of change it back by the time we do get crowds in, whenever that will be. Seems very similar to the Mustafa Ali heel turn, in that they know they can do it now, but it won't last forever. However, no matter what happens, no matter what happens down the line, Shorty G is dead and buried, and we are all better for it.
I mean, yeah, I'm a big fan of Chad Gable coming back because Shorty G sort of become that like comedy character for the past few months, whereas Chad Gable is a very, very good worker. And as we saw with American Alpha in NXT, that he can perform. And now he's on the same roster as Daniel Bryan. That would be a very good match further down the line. Both two very good technical wrestlers. The next segment was for Hell in a Cell. And it was Bayley's contract signing. Obviously, last week on SmackDown, we had the official contract signing, which Sasha signed straight away, but Bayley refused to sign. Bayley's in the ring with a chair, as always. When is Bayley not in the ring with a chair? It's the most iconic duo in WWE at this moment in time. And she said she's not signing the contract. Out comes Sasha, contract in hand. And as we saw in NXT UK, contracts mean shenanigans. And we get more of that today. Words are exchanged. Bayley swings for Sasha, misses. Sasha lays a whooping on Bayley, put her in the bank statement via the chair, and forced Bayley to sign. I mean, as Chris rightly points out in our notes, not sure that's how contract law works. But anyway, it's official. We have Bayley versus Sasha Banks this Sunday at Hell in a Cell for the SmackDown Women's Championship. And boy, this match is going to be good. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think we've been saying this the whole time. I'm glad this is happening in the cell. I hope they get a lot of time for the cell, Currently, at the time of recording, there's only 5 matches announced for Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, which would lead you to believe that the Hell in a Cell matches themselves are going to be long ones. I hope this is one of the ones that gets plenty of time. It deserves it. This is... Oh, I don't know. WWE have built some good feuds. I was going to say this might be the hottest feud going, WWE, but Jey Uso, Roman Reigns, which I'll come to later, very hot feud. Randy versus Drew McIntyre, very hot feud. This has been good. WWE's done good. They've only got a few feuds going, but they're good ones. Shout out, Vince. Well done. Anyway, yeah, I'm hoping this gets the time it deserves. I'm very, very excited for it. But moving swiftly on, we get Seth versus Buddy Murphy. It is disciple versus leader. It is disciple versus Messiah. This match, just on paper, forgetting the feud and everything else, is something that excites me a lot because these two are incredibly talented. Get lots of mat wrestling early on. You can see that Seth is trying to work to keep Buddy Murphy grounded. Get a couple of nice strikes from both sides. They sold them really well. It kind of built that feud mentality into it. They were really trying to beat each other up. Seth gets sent to the outside. Murphy charges in as if he's going to do a dive. Seth moves. Murphy does a baseball slide to the outside. Seth then charges into Murphy, who then backdrops Seth Rollins onto the announce table. This is a really nice spot because it just seems set up as the typical early face shine spot where the face hits the suicide dive and we all move on. They give a little swerve to it. I really enjoyed that. Seth cuts Murphy off by knocking his feet off the top rope. We cut to the back. We see Aaliyah is watching backstage with Rey and Dominic Mysterio. They try and get her to leave. She says she's not going anywhere. Cut back to the ring, and Seth is working the gut of Buddy Murphy. He has a waist lock applied very, very tight. Eventually, Murphy hits a comeback, which includes a missile drop kick from the top for a double down. Sends Seth to the outside. Now he hits his big dive over the top. And when I say big dive, I mean big dive. He nearly cleared Seth Rollins. He just clips the shoulder of him. If he had missed, that would have stunk, because that would have well hurt. Seth back into the ring. Buddy Murphy hits now the most popular move in WWE, it seems. It's a really nice top rope meteora. However, as he lands, he sells his shoulder, rolls to the outside, essentially pops it back in, which allows Seth to capitalize. Seth hits a flying knee for a near fall. They fight up to the top. Buddy Murphy goes for a sunset flip into a powerbomb, but sells his shoulder again. This is a really nice little wrinkle to the story because we see Seth working the gut early on because that's how he's cut him off. Now he's working the arm. You can see he's just trying to pick him apart, look for weaknesses. This is good storytelling. Murphy gets a couple of near falls with roll-ups after dodging stomp after stomp after stomp. But eventually, Seth gets hold of the arm, rings him to the mat with it, and then hits the stomp for the win. This was a very, very good match in itself. After the match, Seth grabs those vicious kendo sticks, which have been the extra member of this feud the whole way through. Sets up to beat down on Murphy for it. Aaliyah's out. She goes out to save Murphy. Out comes Dom to save Aaliyah. He takes a whooping from Seth. Then out comes Rey with a chair to save the day. That Seth runs off the back. He cowers away. Aaliyah goes to hug Buddy Murphy, who's by the ropes with her back to her family. And Buddy Murphy's face. Did he have a shit-eating grin on his face? It seemed like there was a little smirk. You only see it for a second. God, I hope it was, because that is really good storytelling. If this has been Buddy Murphy and Seth's plan all along, I am so in for this. It would make sense as to why we don't have a Seth match or a Rey Mysterio match or a Buddy Murphy match on Hell in a Cell because we're still building the feud up. This just, the match itself was very, very good. And that little just moment of that grin is enough to get everyone thinking. I loved this whole segment. Crush, what did you think?
Yeah, the match itself, we can talk about it later because it's our one match to watch. But yeah, a match, very good. No matter what the circumstances, these two are very good workers and will put a great showing on. The storyline, it seems to have dragged on for a long time, but they keep changing it up, so it's always keeping it a bit more interesting every time. Like, we saw this Aaliyah stuff happen, about a month ago now, and it still is interesting to this day because there's always like an added little element. Like, now we've got that Murphy smile as soon as she turns her back on the family. So, as you said, it could be their plan overall, but it sort of adds a bit more intrigue. So, interesting to see where they go, and it does make sense why they haven't had a match confirmed for Hell in a Cell yet. So, certainly be interesting going into Sunday to see if anything happens on that. We then get our main event, and it is Tribal Consequences time. Roman Reigns is out to announce the consequences for Jey Uso if he loses in Hell in a Cell this Sunday. So, he comes out with Paul Heyman, who I can reveal, will feature on the Go Home Show podcast before Hell in a Cell on Sunday. So make sure you turn on your subscriptions for that, because you will get it first for anyone else. Before they can speak, we see a masked Jey Uso in Reigns' suite, and he's saying they've got tribal cheese, they've got tribal raspberries, and that Roman Reigns has changed, and he's and his head is so far up his ass, he's lost connection with those around him. Suddenly, the mask comes down. Drama. It's not Jey. It's Jimmy. It's Twin Magic. It's the Bella Twins Twin Magic style turn, which we haven't seen used by the Usos a lot, which, again, adds a another dimension to them. Jey is behind Roman Reigns. He hits a super kick into a splash, and the Usos escape, celebrating. Reigns sells, but then recovers and tells Jey what the consequences will be. If Reigns says he quits, Reigns is the Universal Champion, the face of the WWE, tribal chief, head of the table. You get the picture. He can live with that. But if Jey quits, he either has to accept Reigns as the tribal chief and fall in line, or he and Jimmy and their children and their children's children and their children's children are out of the Anoa'i family. Drama. Show ends. Chris, what do you think of this stipulation?
The stipulation I really like. I think it's the right thing to do. I think I would have reworked it slightly so that we went, the end of the show was the Uso celebrating, because unless WWE has something really mad planned, which I don't believe they do for this, I think it's just they're going to do the sensible thing here and have Roman Reigns go over at the weekend. It'd have been a nice point to have to leave the show with the Usos on top, just to kind of build that little bit more of, they could do it. There's two of them, they could do it. Sort of reworked it so you have the consequences essentially come in beforehand, and then you go home with the Usos on top. However, for everything that we got out of that section, I really enjoyed it. Like you said, it's great to see Twin Magic. It's great to see Jimmy back. It's great to see Reigns really leaning into the character of Tribal Chief. All in all, this was the right way to. This is the right way to go into Hell in a Cell with everything set up as it is.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think this match is going to be the show stealer, as did Pretty Deadly, which you can read on spoof.com or listen on all good podcasting apps. And I believe when this podcast goes out, it'll be on our YouTube, Spoof Wrestling. Go check it out. 19 minutes of goodness and a really good article from Chris. More to come from him today as well, with a nice exclusive piece. Which
Capital J journalist. That's what I am. So, going straight into top three moments, because we're looking quite similar today, we'll go one for one, if that makes sense. We'll start off with number three. I will start with my number three. My top three moment is Buddy Murphy's shit-eating grin at the end of that segment. Maybe it's nothing, but it's given me enough to think about for a week that I am horrendously entertained by it. Really enjoyed it. That is my number three. Crush, what's yours?
Mine is the potential Daniel Bryan times Kevin Owens tag team. Like we spoke about earlier, and Daniel Bryan reminded Kevin Owens about the times he's turned on his partners, but this excites me. When we saw Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins last week, I was talking about how potentially have a feud between them two, but this excites me even more because Kevin Owens is one of the best workers in WWE, as is Daniel Bryan. Put the two together and you've got a dominant tag team that would only be defeated by synergy. So, number two moment, Chris, and we have the same one here.
Yeah, we do. Number two is Twin Magic. I don't know how it's never been done by the Usos before, but I'm glad it's happening now. I'm glad it was saved for this moment. The whole segment, as we said, worked really, really well, but I think this was a nice little thing to do. Having the mask on was a bit weird, but actually, again, it worked really nicely given the current situation, the current climate that we're in. It's enough to be like, yeah, you probably would be wearing a mask in that situation, so that's fair. So I really enjoyed it. I thought this was great. Number one moment, I'm going to let you go first because my number one moment is the correct answer. So I'm going to let you go first with what is a very, very good moment, but it's not the number one moment.
Yeah, my number one moment from SmackDown was Sasha forcing Bayley to sign the contract. It plays out so well into the story that it's going to be carnage inside there. There's going to be chairs involved because that's Bayley's sidekick, really, should we say, these days. And Bayley's chair this time forced her into signing the contract when Sasha Banks put her in the bank statement via a chair to sign that contract and make it official for Sunday. Chris, let's hear it. Come on.
My number one moment. Rest in peace. T's and P's. Thoughts and prayers. But Shorty G is dead. Chad Gable is back. I am a huge Chad Gable mark. I think he's just unbelievably talented. I think the moment that stole it for me, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. And Luke Harper has tweeted about this, or the artist formerly known as Luke Harper has tweeted about this. And it was the time he went for a double. Bear in mind, Luke Harper is 6 foot a lot. Weighs 200 and many, many pounds. Chad Gable is neither of those things. Luke Harper went to do a double leg takedown on him during the Royal Rumble, and Chad Gable just sat on him, essentially. Didn't give Luke Harper the option, completely out-wrestled him, and then whispered into his ear, "I'll be back, I've got something else to do," and just casually walked off and fought someone else. If this guy can put someone who is probably near enough a foot taller than him, 100 pounds heavier than him, into the dirt like it's nothing, they are being underutilized. They're being undervalued. I'm excited to see Chad Gable as Chad Gable being back. That is my number one moment. My one match to watch from the night, and crush, I believe, is the same for you.
Yep.
No surprise. It is Buddy Murphy versus Seth Rollins, Disciple versus Messiah. This match was excellent. I won't go into too much detail because I spoke about it a lot already, but the storytelling is excellent. The selling is excellent. It did exactly what it needs to do. And then the cherry on top, with the hundreds and thousands and the whipped cream and the hot fudge sauce, was that shit-eating grin at the end. I can't say enough about it. I loved it. Crush, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a lot. I agree with everything you say there. Go and check it out. It's a very, very, very good match. And as Chris said, there's that little twist at the end which keeps you thinking. And it's going to keep Chris up all night until Hell in a Cell, when we might get some answers. But anyway, just before we finish, I want to give a special mention to the Otis and Miz court segment. I was going to include it as number three moment because it had JBL, Ron Simmons and Teddy Long player, but Chris won't let me have it, basically. Anyway, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening in. Make sure to leave us a review on the podcast if you've enjoyed it. Follow us on Twitter at Go Home Show Pod and check us out on YouTube, Sports Wrestling, for all our interviews. Make sure to check out the main podcast featuring NXT UK's Pretty Deadly as they stop by for a chat all things NXT UK, lockdown reunions and dream matches. We discuss the greatest Hell in a Cell match of all time, a closer look at WWE Untold, Mankind versus Undertaker and much more. Speaking of Mankind, also known as Mick Foley, and many other aliases, check out our interview with him on all good podcasting apps where he discusses the aforementioned match. Thanks for listening in. Let's go home.